wise. Without having any chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man.
So many topics in the Proverbs to choose from, but I wanted to take a chance to look at the slug's view. That's really what the passage tells us. This tells the slugs to take a look. I kind of created a slug to ant scale that I think everybody is on. By nature, I think we find people who are always busy. They're scurrying like an ant. You almost never see an ant not moving, right? When it's not moving, it's usually dead or talking to another one. But slugs, you see it not moving, you're like, okay, that's kind of what it does. And so all of us probably have a tendency to be one or the other. I mean, I've known people, I have family members. I am not tending to the ant, by the way. The thing about slugs is slugs will almost always tell you, I'm thinking. They're always thinking. I'm planning to do that. I'm thinking of the best, most efficient way to do that so I can do it. It will take very little time. But I'm going to spend a few hours thinking about it. But I have a brother who could never stop moving, bouncing off the walls. You know, they started giving him, before it was ADD and before ADHD, they were giving him medicine to kind of slow him down from real early. But he just never stopped moving. You know, he's like bouncing, like, you know, just pinball going around. He never stopped going. I think the challenge for everybody on the scale, whether you're the ant by nature or you're the slug by nature, is to figure out how to improve yourself. Because the ant by nature, even though that's a good tendency to always be active and be doing something, the problem can be that you're doing things that aren't that important. They're not actually profitable. They're just busy work. And busy work in and of itself doesn't serve a great purpose other than you just have extra energy to burn off. The slug, on the other hand, might be a thinker, might be like, you know, I'm always contemplating. And yet, if you're not actually doing, the thinking doesn't do much. At some point, you have to do. And so learning the lesson for the slug of the ant, to be active and to be busy. It's okay to think, but you've got to keep going. You've got to keep pressing on. And this whole chapter, and there's all kinds of Proverbs, by the way, along with other passages we're going to look at, that talk about the idea of being busy, of working. In fact, one of the titles I thought about was just the blessing of work. Because understand that the ability to actually be active in doing something, we shouldn't take it for granted. We shouldn't take it like, oh, I got to do that. Because when that ability to actually function and do things is taken away from you, you miss it terribly. And everybody who has gotten to that point, whether it's a temporary disability or a permanent disability, and you're not able to actually do and be active and take care of things yourself, it hurts. You have to help others. You need others' help more, and it affects you. And just the ability to work and be active is something we shouldn't make light of. And we should use what we've been given by God to do things. And so this lesson and these verses, by the way, in Proverbs 6, are directed to the sluggard. So for us, if you're an ant, the lesson's not kind of focused on you as much. The focus is much more on those who might tend to be a sluggard, or in their own words, the thinkers amongst us. And we have to get active. We have to be busy. And so he's telling here in these verses, He says, sluggard, look at the ant. You know, there's that scale. You got the ants and the slugs. And he said, you look down over there and you're like, wow, they're just constantly moving, aren't they? They're always doing stuff. Yeah, and that's really what the passage is about, what they do. But I want to take the lessons of it. So I want to look at some of these from this passage here in Proverbs 6. They're not lazy. Ants always moving. Never going to accuse an ant of being lazy. Maybe dead, but not lazy. It also doesn't need supervision. Doesn't need a lot of direct supervision. Doesn't have, you think about, it says, you know, verse 7, without any chief officer or ruler. One of the great points that all of us can learn, even if we are ants, is to be doing good things. Because in the very first verse here, verse 6, he's talking to the sluggard to look at the ant, consider her ways, and be wise. Not just be active, but be wise. Do it well. Be active in a wise manner. That's what we're being told to do. And so, don't be lazy. Get up and do something. You know, it's like, oh, I'm thinking. Well, if you're, do you have a parent? I mean, if you tend to be the sluggard type, you probably had a parent that, and you said, well, I'm considering, I'm thinking about. Well, do something while you're thinking. It's like, come on, don't just sit there. And I find myself, especially in having been a manager in work environments, telling workers to do the same thing sometimes. Especially in construction and building, sometimes, you know, you're kind of thinking, oh, what am I supposed to do next? And you're like, yeah, okay, that's great you're thinking, but, you know, can you, like, do something profitable. Get some of the trash out of here while you're thinking. Do something that's beneficial while you're thinking, okay? So that you're not just standing around. And so not being lazy, not needing a lot of direct supervision. And then the last two, you really see in verse 8. She prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. Now, typically, when we think about right now is harvest time, isn't it? We have all the fall harvest things going on. Summer and harvest are two different periods. And yet, it talks about the ant working to provide food in both periods. And so it's diligent, okay? But also, because not needing supervision, who would you be, if you were responsible for somebody, who would you just kind of let them handle it on their own? Somebody who you think might just sit around and might not really be that disciplined or diligent about it, or somebody who you know, it's like, you know, they're going to be disciplined, they're going to be organized, they're going to figure out what they need to do, they're going to just go through it, and they're going to keep going until it's done. Which one would you not be, you know, making sure you're watching over them all the time? Well, we know, don't we? The person who's disciplined, the person who, you know, maybe writes out their list, plans out their time, organizes it, and then starts doing it right away. That's the person that you're going to, okay, I can trust them to just take care of it. I don't have to be there watching all the time, the whole time looking at them, making sure they're working. And so the lessons of this passage, especially for the sluggards, is to get out of the lazy pattern. Get up, get doing something. That's not telling you not to think, not telling you not to consider things, but it's telling you to don't let yourself get caught in your head. In fact, for some of the brethren here that I've kind of talked with over some of the years who struggle with kind of getting in their head too much, and I've gone through that myself growing up, that sometimes you just have to get going. To get out of your head, you need to be active and you need to do stuff. And one of the real negative sides of always being contemplating and thinking about things is that it can just make you stop and not do anything. And you need to prevent that. And that for me, that's lists. I make lists not because it's my nature. I make lists to keep me going. I got to do these things this morning. I got to do these things this afternoon. It allows me, as more of a sluggard personality type, to not fall into the trap of not getting my work done, of not being disciplined and diligent. And so it's trying to add to my personality type the diligent and the the diligence and discipline and active nature of somebody who might be more active by their own nature. Now, there's a bunch of other passages that I want us to think about. Not irritating to supervisors. How many of you have ever been accused? I don't want to see any hands. Just think to yourself. How many of you have ever been accused by people who supervise you of just being a little irritating to deal with? You know, and most of us who have had that happen to us probably know it, right? Some supervisor has told us that. And so one of the traits, and remember, let's understand a couple things about this. And I haven't gone and looked at all those passages in the New Testament, because there are a lot of passages in the New Testament that tell us about what kind of workers we need to be. As Christ-like workers, we do not represent us. We represent Him. And so we need to represent Him in godliness and wisdom. So we need to be the kind of workers who a supervisor is very glad to have. Now, I wish I had been taught these things when I was a younger person and a younger worker. I didn't learn it till, you know, well into my 20s and 30s, and to really understood the kind of worker we ought to be. But we need to be, and we ought to be, the best workers any company could have. And so we give glory in that, not to us, but to God. And so Proverbs 10:26 there, it's like vinegar to the teeth. By the way, that doesn't sound bad to me. I don't know if the rest of you, my wife hates vinegar. I love vinegar. I can have it almost directly. A lot of types of vinegar. But like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, I do understand the analogy though, is the sluggard to those who send him. It's like, oh, okay, I put responsibility on this person. Oh, I'm going to dread this. And I'm going to fret the whole time until they're done. Right? We don't want to have a supervisor like that. We want to be people who somebody asked us to do something. We want to be like Boaz. Boaz wasn't this at all, was he? When he said he would get it done, Naomi's like, oh, he didn't. She just heard he said he would do it. He's like, oh, yeah, it'll be done today. Total confidence. That's the kind of people we need to grow into. We're not that. As young people, we're not that. Now, it doesn't matter what personality type you are as a young person, you're not this. Everybody, when you're a young person, and that extends usually up to 20 or so, you're not that person that people love to send and give you tons of responsibility to. I mean, now there could be a rare one, but that's not your nature. When you're young, you're not by nature this. These are things you have to actually grow into. And becoming the person who just is so trustworthy that not only they can trust that you'll do it, but that you will stay with it and you'll take care of it until it's done. And if something comes up, you'll let them know right away. That's the kind of person you need to grow into. If you want to represent Christ and God in your life, that's what He's teaching you and asking of you. Excelling in whatever you do. Now, I think there was a lesson Dave talked about in excelling in work and things. And he talked, isn't your wife like excellent at cleaning toilets? Isn't that the analogy you gave, if I remember right? But it's actually proper. Whatever your work is, if it is to clean up and you're a janitor, do it well. That's what he's asking of us. Now here this Proverbs 22 says, do you see a man skillful in his work? And that means really good at it. That person will stand before kings. Do kings use janitors? Yeah. Which ones do they want doing the work? Yeah, they want people who are good at it. Whatever you do, do it well. That's what he's asking of us. That's the kind of workers that all of us need to be. What if it's like we're working for a company we don't really like? What if we don't really like it? Doesn't matter. I mean, unless they're asking you to do something you shouldn't be doing and you need to leave, whatever you're doing, do it well. Do it to the very best of your ability. By the way, there's a lot of passages in the New Testament about that as well. Whatever you do, we're going to look at a couple of them, but not all of them. Be skillful. Learn how to do it better. Because sometimes we look at jobs like cleaning toilets, cleaning the bathroom, cleaning the dish, and we don't think, it's just not that important. There are no unimportant jobs. We all want, when we go to use a restroom, we like them when they're clean, right? We don't like them when they're not clean. And so every job, no matter how menial, no matter how small, it deserves to be done well and to the very best of your ability. Now, obey as to Christ. Colossians 3, and there's a couple of passages, there's a few of them that I'll talk about, same idea. Colossians 3:22 says, "Bondservants, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service." Don't be active and busy while they're looking, but as people pleasers. By the way, that's not in that negative sense of being a people pleaser. You're just trying to, you know, please people, and you're like, I just need to make people happy. I'm just going to make them happy with me. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about that you're doing things that other people will like, especially your masters, supervisors, managers, whatever. But obey it. And he says, with sincerity, fearing the Lord. In fact, some passages actually say, as to Christ. Do it for Christ. You're not doing it because your master is wonderful, by the way. Everybody here, most people here who have a manager. Now, you can show me hands. Anybody here have a manager that's not that good? No, her hand shot up right away. Like, oh, yeah. Knows right, you can tell she knows right which one. Most of us have managers that aren't that good. They're not worthy of working hard for. But that's not the point. It's not about them. It's about Christ. It's about you. You doing the absolute best, regardless of their worthiness. And that's what he's asking of us. This is something that it's repeated. This concept is repeated a number of times in the New Testament. How often, especially, now we're applying this to kind of being a worker today, because that's kind of the best application of the idea of a bondservant. But in their day, a bondservant was a slave. Can you imagine being a slave, how often they would have needed been reminded, no, you be a good slave. You work hard. We think it might be hard to do it in a work environment. How hard would that be to do when you were enslaved to it? And yet maintaining that attitude. And we know, though, the early church did this. That's how they changed the world. This is how they overcame the power of Rome. By the attitude of service. In fact, I was just reading an article that in the early centuries, Rome really struggled with Christians. They weren't just like other religious people that all kind of stayed to themselves, did their own thing, didn't really involve others. And most of the people in their empire didn't like the poor, wretched people, by the way. And here come the Christians, and they're different. In fact, the title became, they were called the Third Way. I had never heard that before. They referred to them as living life in a third way. That they're like, what? Like, you actually purposely go out to wretched, poor people that can't help you at all, that have no value, you know? Yeah, they did that. And they acted and lived in such a way that all of the religious and governmental rulers were off-put. They really didn't understand them. And much like Judaism didn't understand Jesus and his own, you know, followers. And so this is the real key to how Christianity won over the world. And very often I think Christianity has kind of fallen back. It's not that third way anymore. That it often has become a religion that just kind of wants to stay to itself. Do its own thing. And not be out there finding places to help. Finding how they can serve. finding whom they can do good for. And so we kind of want to do good when it's like thrust upon us. Oh, okay, well, the opportunity came. I have to do it now. As opposed to people out there looking for it. So this idea of pleasing comes up again, Titus 2 and verse 9, both pleasing and not argumentative. Titus 2, 9, bondservants are to be submissive to their own masters in everything. They are to be well-pleasing, not argumentative. So I had a phone call the other day. I called a company that does some work for me at my house. They come and spray for bugs and spiders. And I had gotten a text, well, a week or two ago about they had come and done the service. And I was in the house. Back windows were open, and generally they go walk around the house. Usually my dogs get a little, like, hey, people are walking around the backyard. And they're like, I got a text that they had just finished. I'm like, really? Okay. They've rugged out front. I didn't see anything wet. I'm like, now, I thought about calling. He's like, how do I know you actually showed up? I mean, it's because it's possible I didn't see them. And it's possible my dogs were sleeping and didn't see somebody walking by. Okay. So I called the other day. They hadn't applied my payment to the bill. And I'm like, you know, it's like, how do I know you actually showed up? Well, you should have had something in the door. Well, I don't think I had anything in the door. And I know the problem at the new house in Star is that that maps take you to the corner house. They don't take you to our house because apparently it's two new subdivision. It's not all the different addresses are not laid out yet. So it gets you to our street, but probably the whole street takes you to one particular house. And right now there's nobody in it. And so I'm thinking they went and treated that house. So they came out the other day. But I called the lady and the thing. And I was like, so I was telling her, talking. Oh, and she started getting mad at me because I hadn't called earlier. Because we don't have a way of knowing they did or didn't do it. You know, like at a certain point, I was like, you know, I don't want to argue about it. I'm not even asking you to come back out. She goes, oh, well, send somebody back out. Oh, that's fine. I said, but really, I don't want to argue about it. I just, like, how do I know you've been here? And then she told me, well, I should have had papers. I never had a paper, so I don't think they hit my house. But either way, it's like, she actually apologized. I was like, you don't really want to argue, because she wasn't trying to argue, but she was, like, arguing with me that I should have been better. If I had been better, then they would have been better. Like, you know, sorry, I didn't call and complain sooner. But I was thinking, like, as a company, if that was my person on the phone, I'd be like, well, don't argue with clients. Don't argue with people that pay us. You know, that's not good, not helpful. Even though her attitude, what she wanted to accomplish was right, she just had a way of going about it that wasn't great. And we can do that, can't we? We think we're right about stuff, and we're just saying what we think, but do people that supervise us think we're just kind of arguing all the time? And we can be that. And he's telling us, don't be argumentative. Okay? Oh, you should do it this way, not that way. Well, you know, if you think somebody should do something one way, not the other, there's good ways to say that. You know, hey, I thought something might work better. What do you think of this? You're the supervisor. You're the manager. You get to decide. But I just, something I thought about, maybe it'd be good for you, something to consider. Rather than, boy, this is really a dumb way to do it. You should do it this way instead. Right? Now, when I was young, I would have done it. I would have said it the second way. So you learn a little bit of tact. You learn not to be argumentative. Why would Titus tell them that? He's talking to bondservants. He's talking to people who have supervisors, who have people over them. Because can we not, as people, get that way? Pretty easily, right? Even if our motives are right, even if we're trying to do a good thing or a right thing, very easily we can find ourselves arguing. Because we're arguing for our way, as opposed to trying to simply be helpful. And let those who are responsible, those who have authority, make the call. And sometimes we do that out of pride, because very often we want the credit. We worry about credit a lot. Now, I know in the workplace that does matter, because most workplaces with a lot of employees have certain credit stealers, right? There are people who like to take credit for others' work. Like to kind of, you know, like, oh, they thought of that even though somebody else mentioned it to them. Or that, we see that happen all the time. But that person, being that person who's always trying to be the one who gets to make sure you get the credit for everything you do, that doesn't go work out well in life in the long run. And so being kind, being generous, and being giving, and being helpful, and being pleasing, that gets noticed. And that becomes a trait that people see about us. And so that we are to be well-pleasing and not argumentative. And this word he uses here, I didn't put it up here, I probably should have, to be submissive. Now, you think about the idea of why would a bondservant who is by law enslaved to somebody be told to be submissive? Because aren't they automatically submissive? You would. Now, a lot of times we would think that. We think, well, you're automatically submissive because I'm in the submissive role. But no, that's not at all true, because the word submissive does not mean that you are under somebody else. What it means is that you choose to follow somebody. And very often we're under other people that we don't think are very good or talented, and we don't like following them. And we might be under them, we might not have as much authority as they do, but we don't really like following them, and we choose to not follow them. And so we kind of do our own thing. And he says, don't do that. You follow. If you're working somewhere and there are people in charge and they have authority, you can mention things, you can bring things up, you can offer helpful suggestions, but you follow. You do what you're asked to do. That's the Christ-like way. All labor has benefit. In all toil there is profit, Proverbs 14:23 says, but mere talk tends only to poverty. You ever notice that the sluggards do tend to talk a lot too? You know, I guess in my sluggard tendencies, thinking a lot and talking a lot, boy, the preacher just probably jumped right off the page. Like, oh, you're fit right for this job. There is profit in cleaning your toilets. There is profit in cleaning, you know, the dishes. There's profit in cleaning your clothes every week. You know, I remember probably the most routine job I ever had. Well, I had a couple of them, but UPS, that was only a kind of a Christmas season job, you know, just packages. Packing them and rolling for hours at a time. But also when I worked night crew for a number of years for a grocery store, my responsibility was a certain aisle. Every day I grabbed, you know, I started off in dog food aisle. Every day you grabbed all the bags of dog food and filled the shelves every night. Because every night you showed up, people had taken more. It's like the shelves are empty again. You put them back up. It's just okay. It's the same exact thing every single day. Well, but if I didn't do that job, people couldn't buy the food for their dogs. I eventually got, you know, as I moved up through the town, I got put on the baking goods aisle. A lot more stuff there to replace. But when we go to the grocery store, we're glad somebody did that, aren't we? Somebody had to do that for you and I to buy it. To make our, you know, desserts or our, you know, parties and for our, you know, holidays. There is profit in labor. When you work, when you labor, even if you don't make much money, there's profit in it. Because that's not talking about a paycheck here. I'm talking about just working. Now, because I want to understand a couple of things. First off, I want to look at the view from the other side. Because there is another point of view about working hard. Because if you take all of that, those principles from that first slide, and just talk about, oh, you know, so the people who tend to be a workaholic, they love that slide, right? Now, maybe not loving the attitude part of that things, but they, boy, workaholics, man. The ant, whew, yeah. The problem is that there is another side. And the scriptures That's why there's a third way, usually. It's not the two extremes. There's a third way. And first off, in Proverbs 23:4-5, and I'm just going to turn over to there. I didn't put them up, all these passages. So in Proverbs 23, starting verse 4, it says, "Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning." Let's see, did I get the right? "Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it is gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle toward heaven." And in fact, some translations say don't overwork. The word toil doesn't just mean labor. It actually means difficult. Like, don't overwork. There's an amount to work, and then there's a time to stop working. And some people struggle with that. And they think, if I just keep working, I'm going to get rich. And that could be true. You might work so hard, you may save up lots of money, and you accumulate tons of money, and you might be like, you know, I read articles about people who, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I retired by 35 with, you know, $2 million in the bank. Okay, great. What are you going to do the rest of your life? I don't know. Yeah, and then some of the articles by people who have done that find it's not all that fulfilling. What are you doing? All the other 35-year-olds are working. What are you doing with all your time? Laying around? And with nobody else? And so overworking is advised, because riches, by the way, you can work really hard and never accumulate lots of riches. Because some people who accumulate lots of riches don't overwork to get it. It's really more chance, circumstance, family, whatever, you know, particular job. You got out of school, you got out of high or college, you got a job with a particular company, and maybe that company, I remember a family that, you know, went to work for a small company, and then that company got bought by a big company. All of a sudden, they had all kinds of employee stock options, you know, and back, especially in the 90s, you know, tech stocks were just going through the roof, much like now, but back then, they had no reason to. And so they were going up. You had all these, you know, millionaires that, young millionaires that hadn't done much. They think they're worth it. They often think, they kind of fall into the trap of thinking they deserve it. But that's a bit of a chance thing. And people often think that they worked for it. They deserve it. And that's what he's saying here, by the way, that riches have a tendency that they can sprout wings. Because back mid the last, remember the last economic decline in 7 and 8, 07 and 08? Lots of people had wealth, and just a bunch of that wealth went right out the window. Happens all the time. Happened in 2000 when the NASDAQ crashed. People's wealth. Remember family talking about retiring in their 40s. They're still working, by the way. They thought, oh, yeah, look at all these millions of dollars in stock options I have. And then, but there's rules to those stock options, employee stock options. You can't just sell them all whenever you want. You know, you can sell them at certain times. And then the stock falls and they become worthless. It's like, oh, they're worth millions. And now they're worth nothing. Oh, okay, before I got a chance to use them. Happens. Happens all the time. A lot of paper wealth that can disappear quickly. And that's what the passage is talking about. That's why you want to work, and you want to work regularly and be diligent at working, but don't overwork thinking, well, now I'm going to really hit it. You might not. It might simply all vanish. And nothing that you necessarily did. It might vanish just because of time and circumstance. The economy, the, you know, world economy, which we as a have no control over. So godliness and contentment, that's what riches really are. By the way, in 1 Timothy 6:6-10, another passage to look at, kind of, you know, into other perspectives on this. Get over there. 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in verse 6. It says, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." So when we talk about riches from a godly perspective, We're not talking about a lot of money. God, what riches really is in Scripture is having an abundance more than you need. That's actually what riches. There's poverty, having less than you need, right? Daily necessities of life. And there's abundance, meaning you have more than you need. And by definition, most people, especially in America, are rich by the biblical concept of it. I mean, we have the heaviest poor people in the world, right? In a lot of poor places, when you can tell people who are really poor in some countries, right? Because they it shows in their body. They don't have enough food every day. We don't typically have that problem here. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen from time to time, but that's not an American problem. Our poverty is not as poor as other places that still exist in this world, by the way. In fact, I was reading an article a couple days ago about the transfer of wealth that's coming. There is apparently a $68 trillion transfer of wealth that will be happening over the next 20 years from the richest generation in the history of the world, the baby boomers. They are the wealthiest generation in the history of the world. And they are going to be transferring $69 trillion to millennials over the next 20 years. See, we knew there was a reason the millennials were just staying at home, not worrying about work. They figured they'd get it one way or another. I'm just kidding. But he says, we brought nothing into the world, we can take nothing out of the world, but if we have food and clothing with these, we will be content. By the way, the baby boomers shouldn't be thinking they did it, because it came mostly out of their parents and the World War II generation, which we often refer to in this country as the greatest generation. Our wealth was built upon post-World War II abundance. The wealth the baby boomers have and their ability to kind of, you know, have all kinds of time to, you think about back in the 60s when lots of baby boomers were out protesting, why did they have so much time and plenty of money to drive around everywhere and just, you know, make signs and have plenty of paint, or like an abundance of time? They should have been working more. But we need to be content and understand that have godliness and to have all that we need, that's really tremendous. That is tremendous wealth that God's talking about. He says, we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food, this is where that verse in Ecclesiastes comes. You know, it's like one of the reasons that Solomon was kind of woe is he's like, oh man, I built up all this stuff and I'm going to have to leave it to some stupid kid of mine. I'm paraphrasing Solomon, by the way. But that's essentially what he talked about. He talked about the trouble of like having done all this work and having accumulated all this stuff, and then I just got to leave it to somebody who didn't do anything for it. What are they going to do with it? You know what they're going to do with it? Most of them are going to blow it. They're going to waste it. Now, it's not going to simply disappear. It'll just go into other people's hands who are a little more diligent, a little harder workers, and who accumulated it better. That's typically what happens. Now he says, but if we have food and clothing, with these we'll be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. So this is the other side, right? He says, don't worry about that part of it. If that happens, that happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Lots of godly people have been wealthy, and lots of godly people have been poor. Those circumstances doesn't change whether we work, whether we labor, whether we give out effort and we're diligent in all those areas of life. That attitude that we have of being hard workers, of being good workers, shouldn't change based on the circumstances of our life. That's what he's trying to get us to see. But he's saying, don't worry about it. It's like, I just got to have money, got to have lots of riches. No. That's kind of something not always in your control. What's in your control is your attitude and your work. Your effort. That you can control. Do that part. Satisfaction and increase come from your hand, Now, Proverbs 12:11, and I think this is one of the reasons why I mentioned, you know, that generations that often just receive a lot of wealth don't handle it well. It's because very often there's not a tremendous amount of satisfaction or kind of self-pride for having just been given a lot of stuff, right? But when you've actually worked and you've earned it, there's a different level, right? Think about when you're a young kid. All the toys or presents you were given as gifts, did you treat them exactly the same as the very first expensive thing you saved up to buy? No. It's like, hey, we're just giving to you. It's like, oh, if it broke, your parents would get you a new one. But when you saved up a bunch of money from your first job to buy that very first thing you really had your eyes on, you treated that thing. It's like, you know, you accumulate to get your very first car. Now, I had a car from my parents that drove around, an old Ford Galaxy 500 in the 60s. That was kind of like, eh. You know, I wasn't prideful. But it got me places, so I was happy to have a car that I could drive around. But then I bought my own car, a Mercury Capri, 1972 Mercury Capri. That car I treated like a baby. Gave it everything. It got totaled in 86. When it got totaled in 86, it was in nicer condition than it was in 1972 when it came off the showroom floor. It had been repainted, it had been modified, it had been upgraded in all kinds of ways. I have not really treated cars the same since that one got totaled in a wreck. But that was the very first thing that really I had that had kind of accumulated for myself. And I treated it like that, right? And I didn't treat the stuff that I was given by my parents the same way, because I saw how hard I had worked for it. But there was a satisfaction in that. And that's what Proverbs 12, 11 and 13, 11 are both talking about, this idea. So I'm going to go look at those fairly quickly here. Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. And then in 13:11, it says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gathers little by little will increase it. Hastily also could be translated by fraud. So you didn't earn it, you didn't work for it, and it just kind of like jumps. And they say the vast majority of people who just get an abundance amount of wealth lose it. I think the statistics I saw multiple things on money and finances. Football players or professional athletes who make a lot of money early. They make it in their 20s and maybe into their 30s, and that's about it, right? And it's got to last the rest of life. So, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars, and yet more than 50% of them will be broke. Most of us couldn't imagine that, right? Actually having accumulated it, having like in the bank tens of millions of dollars, and then going, well, that can't last the rest of your life. Because you know how much, say, $10 million, you can just, the interest alone, you never have to actually draw off it. The interest alone is good. Even in right now, is giving you $100,000 plus. in the worst kind of, you put it in a bank savings account, you're getting over $100,000 a year. And yet they go broke. One, they don't know how to manage money. But it also doesn't seem like they really deserve it, right? Because it just kind of comes upon you. It just happens. Same exact thing happens to people who, you know, get, you know, lottery winnings. Usually they're broke. And not only are they broke, typically, and the same happens with professional athletes too, you also have lost most of your family and friends. Your relationships have changed with everybody who you had good relationships with. All those things get adjusted for the worse, typically. It's very difficult to manage just a whole onslaught of money by people. And so real satisfaction and real increase come from your labor. So even if you get given stuff by people, even if you inherit things, you need to develop the habit of working. Of being a hard worker, of being somebody who accumulates, of being somebody who kind of increases little by little, that habit will suit you well regardless of whether you get some windfall or not get a windfall. And then, I'm not going to read the passage, but Ecclesiastes 2:24, and there's a whole bunch of them in Ecclesiastes, tells you us to enjoy the fruit of our labor. We should enjoy what the work we do. Part of what we do, there goes back even to the law. He actually commanded them to rejoice with a tenth of their harvest. And I think that's kind of, there's an appropriate amount to when you have accumulated, to take a portion of that and to enjoy yourself, to enjoy your life, and to recognize that you have been granted this and been given this by God, these opportunities. That you should be thankful for the things you can enjoy in life. And you go, well, there's other people suffering. Yeah, but does that mean we shouldn't be thankful and rejoice in what we've been given because other people are suffering? No. That's something we can do and still rejoice in the blessing we have. Both of those things can be done. We can help others who are in need, and we can rejoice with the blessings we have. And we should do both. We shouldn't focus on one or the other alone. And then lastly, and I'm not going to read all of this, not about a paycheck. I'm not talking about paycheck. I'm not talking about earning money. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, by the way, a passage that now you guys all know, right? Who is this written to? Not written to women. It's written to men, young men. This passage was written, this is actually, comes from, talks about the words of King Lemuel, an oracle his mother taught him. This is a mother talking to her son and saying, listen, I would love you to have a great wife. That worth is more than you can ever imagine. But here's how you need to spot her. It is not the one who's going to entice you with how she looks. She's going to be the one who's a hard worker. That's actually what almost of this, when you go from 10 through 31, you know, and we kind of take out, what are the actual attributes being described here? So he trusts her. She does good, not harm. 13, she seeks wool and flax and works with her willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it's yet night, provides food for her household. She considers a field, buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength, makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. Puts her hand to the distaff. Her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor, reaches out her hands to the needy. Not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine. So the specifics of all the things she's doing are not the point that I'm trying to get you to see. All through here, she's working, isn't she? She is laboring. And that's when it comes to the very last part of this Proverbs 31, where it says, give her of the fruit of her hands, in verse 31, and let her works praise her in the gates. What you're really looking for, especially in a spouse, and it works both ways, by the way, is somebody who works hard, who gives effort, who is diligent, disciplined, because if you're married to somebody who isn't those things, much like somebody supervising the sluggard, you're going to be married to the sluggard. And that's no fun. It's no fun either way, by the way. And that's what this mother was telling her son. And really, I suspect most people are telling both their daughters and sons they don't want lazy people as their spouses. So it isn't about the money we earn. It's about just working, doing things, being active, being productive. What can we do with our life to benefit not only ourselves but others around us? Appreciate your time this morning, and I went a little longer than I wanted, but I hopefully that you enjoyed it and gave you some things to really think about, especially for the younger amongst us and for those who are older. I saw lots of nodding heads for those who are older who recognize the wisdom of all those passages, but when we're younger, just understand that's not who you are by nature. No matter kind of who you are, no matter your personality type, it's not by nature who we are as kids. We are foolishness is bound up in the heart of children. And it takes time to develop the godliness and the basically hard or the hardworking ethic that all of us need to aspire to. And like, as I said, this isn't about a job and a paycheck. Oh, if you didn't need a paycheck, fine, but that doesn't mean you don't work. That doesn't mean you don't put out effort, you don't labor. So if you're here today and you need help in anything, we have a song selected. Go ahead and open up 555. Seek ye first, right? I think I had remembered. And so we're going to sing that just to close out. And if you're here and you need help in something, we can help you or serve you. And if you're in need, we want to help you. But we don't always know everybody who needs help. And so if you need help, please let us know. It's together we stand and sing.